This is Brian Oakes, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Erskine, Minnesota. We are pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning, farm news on the Red River Farm Network. Merry Christmas to one and all. Temperatures will warm this morning with highs in the 20s under mostly cloudy skies. Christmas Day will start in the teens in the morning, rising to the 20s and low 30s in the afternoon. Later in the day, there's a light wintry mix possible, including a chance for freezing rain. Looking ahead, Friday could bring a slight chance of light snow or a mix with a high in the 20s. Saturday, breezy, highs only in the upper teens to low 20s. And Sunday will be colder, morning lows near zero, highs in the teens with windy conditions. The risk of blowing snow will increase on Sunday, posing some travel challenges for those returning from their holiday destinations.
A Section 301 investigation found China violated trade rules in the global computer chip market. However, the Trump administration does not plan to impose new tariffs on semiconductor imports from China until June of 2027. This investigation began a year ago under President Joe Biden. The delayed tariff response from the current White House is seen as part of a trade ceasefire between the U.S. and China that began when Trump met with Chinese President Xi this past October in South Korea.
As farmers prepare for the 2026 planting decisions, questions remain about whether the upcoming federal bridge payments could influence acreage choices. NDSU Extension crops economist Frayne Olson says those payments are unlikely to shift planting plans.
From my perspective, I don't think so, because a lot of the bridge payments are most farm managers that I have talked to, most of the bridge payments are going to be used to try and clean up 2025 bills. And so as we move into 2026 and we start looking at plantings and what will make us a little bit of money and what will fit into our rotation and fit into our labor restrictions, I don't think the bridge payments will have a direct impact on planted acreage.
Olson says the structure of the payments also limits their impact on future cropping decisions.
Again, mainly because the payments that we're going to be getting soon is based off of last year's plantings. So the U.S. government is pretty careful not to try and send incentives to farmers to try and plant one crop over another crop, trying to let the market figure that out. So I really don't anticipate that we're going to see big changes in planted acreage because of the bridge payments directly.
North Dakota dominating the list of unfilled grain car orders for the week ending December 12th. According to the USDA Grain Transportation Report, North Dakota had 893 unfilled grain car orders for the second week of December. That's up from nearly 650 unfilled orders in the previous week. Minnesota next on the list with over 400 unfilled grain car orders, followed by Kansas with over 200 unfilled orders.
U.S. Class 1 railroads originated over 28,000 grain car loads during the week ending December 13th. That's down 7% from the previous week, unchanged from the same week last year, and 1% above the three-year average. Average December shuttle secondary rail car bids and offers were $388 above tariff for the week ending December 18th, $8 higher than the previous week, $575 higher than the same week last year.
The USDA releasing a catch-up export sales report yesterday covering the week ending December 11th. Corn exports posted another strong week with the commitment pace rising 1 point to 31% ahead of the same point in 2024. Soybean export sales reached a marketing year high of 88 million bushels, though weekly shipments remain slow as China has just begun taking physical delivery, with cumulative exports to the country just over 10 million bushels compared to 537 million at the same point last year. Overall, soybean export commitments have gained 6 points over the past 2 weeks, but remain 33% behind 2024. Wheat exports also improving, with 15.9 million bushels sold, up 13% from the prior week, and weekly shipments of 18 million bushels. That marks an eight-year high. Commitments for wheat, 22% ahead of last year, with USDA forecasting a 9% increase for the marketing year.
The Fertilizer Institute is raising red flags over the proposed merger between Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern, saying fertilizer shippers already face limited rail options, higher costs, and ongoing service problems. In response to the Surface Transportation Board, the Institute says it is difficult to see how a coast-to-coast merger would fix those issues. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. Changes to federal crop insurance rules are creating confusion for agents and uncertainty for how area-based products like SCO and Stax are delivered. Watts & Associates, head of crop insurance development Kyle Jory, says a recent A&O subsidy adjustment was unexpected and it really lacks clear explanation.
And that again just happened where the code changed, and there has not been an official explanation that's been released, other than to say that it is a reinterpretation of the 2014 Farm Bill. It is essentially saying that in that bill, when the Stax provision was added in there and it alluded to the area plans, that the A&O, which would be administering operating subsidies, would be modified to better reflect other policies, and that number that they should be modified to was 12%.
Jory says while farmers may not see an immediate impact, agencies could be less incentivized to promote SCO and Stax moving forward.
But then those A&O subsidies are very much relied upon for especially the agencies, because a lot of the companies will actually pass through that in the form of a commission to encourage them to write the policies. So we're hearing a lot from agents right now saying that they're worried about what the commission rates are going to be coming through, because without that additional subsidy, there could be an effect. Here again, though, whether or not this was appropriate, as we look back and look at the subsidy, it looks like there's grounds for this in the 2014 Farm Bill. It's just rather unusual that it would happen, you know, so many years later.
USDA's quarterly hogs and pigs report suggests hog producers may be looking at expansion in early 2026, supported by strong returns and improving productivity. This is USDA livestock analyst Michael McConnell.
So overall, what the report indicates is that heading into next year, those farrowings and the fact that we're seeing the intentions are to farrow more hogs in 2026, at least for the first half, that should result in relatively higher hog supplies relative to 2025, which bodes well for pork production and growth in pork production into next year.
McConnell notes producers are planning for growth despite a smaller breeding herd.
Important to note that the sow herd, the number of hogs kept for breeding, is actually down from a year ago. And so they're going to rely a lot more on productivity, particularly the pigs per litter rate, which we've seen grow pretty substantially over the past couple of years. Overall, we've seen, you know, relatively strong returns when looking at, for instance, like the Iowa State farrow to finish returns. We've seen a pretty strong indicator in terms of returns for producers over the past several months, in particular the second half of this year. So some of the increase in hog supplies that we're potentially going to see is likely an indication of the improved returns that we've seen in 2025.
The reopening of the U.S.-Mexican border to Mexican cattle could be announced soon. However, Washington analyst Jim Wiesmeyer expecting a phased-in scientific approach will be taken to prevent the introduction of New World screwworm into the United States. These cattle would be subject to four tests, including three inspections in Mexico.
If they test negative, they will go on to a U.S. site yet to be announced, and then they're going to be tested again. And it's that portion of cattle that pass all four, well, within reason, four tests, who are tested four times. Those are the cattle that's going to be allowed into the United States. Now, this could change, but this is the best information I have at this particular time.
There shouldn't be a big wave of cattle crossing the border when trade resumes. In the Ag Bull podcast, Wiesmeyer said he expects it'll be a slow, methodical process.
Herd health extends beyond a vaccination strategy. Merck Technical Services veterinarian Dina Hardy likes to have protocols in place.
But one of the general rules of thumb is we like to do a branding age, or that 3 to 4 month age vaccine, specifically for clostridial diseases and BRD, simply because calves are born very naive and they rely on mom's colostrum or the internal antibody. But about that time frame, those start waning. And so we want to help that calf build its own immune system. So that's a great time to intervene and vaccinate. Then again, when we think about weaning stresses, we do that earlier on, not because we know the calf is at huge risk for BRD, but because we're setting them up for success in the next phases of production.
There is value in a weaned calf.
So I always encourage folks to continue on the relationships as they've built. If you've always sold weaned calves, now again, not the time to take a shortcut. And there truly is value in that calf that comes with 2 to 3 solid rounds of vaccines, right? They have a great relationship with a vet. They have a herd health plan. And then I think you can get paid for that. So really excited time as a veterinarian to do the right thing for the animal and animal health, but also have a customer or producer that can get paid to do the right thing.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Next month's American Farm Bureau Federation will feature a powerful line of political leaders. In addition to Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins, the Four Corners are on the schedule. Senate Ag Committee Chair John Bozeman, Ranking Member Amy Klobuchar, House Ag Committee Glenn G.T. Thompson, and Ranking Member Angie Craig will outline their vision for farm policy. The Farm Bureau Convention will be January 9th through the 12th in Anaheim.
Managing white mold more effectively in dry beans and soybeans may not require new products, but better timing and application. That according to North Dakota State University plant pathologist Michael Vunch.
We have worked to address when fungicides should be applied, when conditions favor white mold as the crop enters bloom, and also how they should be applied, okay, with an emphasis on fungicide droplet size. This is a focus on utilizing our existing technologies better, and what we have learned is that we can make significant gains by slight modifications to our existing strategies. Fungicide application timing is very important, to pay very close attention to the growth stage.
Bunch says application timing depends on crop type and whether growers plan 1 or 2 fungicide passes.
And if you're going to do a single application, you want to wait a little bit longer because you want that canopy to grow a bit more. And that will extend your protection a little bit longer through the window of maximum susceptibility, that full bloom period in both soybeans and dry beans. If you're going to do 2 sequential applications, you go on a little bit earlier, i.e. you don't sacrifice those early infections, because you're going to go on with a second app and protect the new growth anyhow.
Bunch says research shows proper timing and droplet size can increase fungicide yield response by 50% or more. Checking markets at this hour, we're down 0.5 cent for Minneapolis wheat for the May contract, 589¾. Chicago wheat for May, 5½ higher, and the March KC wheat gains 5¾. March corn, 2¼ higher, 449¾, and soybeans January at 1057¼, gain of 5¾ cents, as mentioned. Quick note, the Chicago Board of Trade closing early today, 12:05 close, of course, for Christmas Eve. Both USDA and futures markets all close tomorrow for the Christmas holiday, but all back in action on Friday. A full day of trading anticipated for Friday. Volume, of course, will be light, but we will be trading throughout the day on Friday. On the farm calendar, the North Dakota State Select Angus Bull and Female Sale is coming up Saturday, January 3rd. That's going to be held at Kist Livestock in Mandan. The National Farmers Union College Conference on Cooperatives is scheduled for February 12th through the 15th. That's taking place in Minneapolis. Again, taking a look at premier cooperative education, bringing together students and young adults from across the country for co-op tours and those educational sessions. Have a great day and Merry Christmas from everyone at the Red River Farm Network.